Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. It's an especially delicate and special time for Hong Kong. I'm sure many of you have heard in the news about protests happening here with students looking for democracy. Well, to be more clear, they're looking for the right to vote from a ballot of people that are not pre-selected and filtered by the Beijing government. I don't like to get too political on this show, but the main idea is when Hong Kong was handed over and transformed from a British colony to a Chinese colony with this two systems, one country rule, there's always been the tension and wondering what's going to happen after the full transformation happens. And we still got a while to go, but there's been these tensions lately that the people have seemed to had enough, or the students, and they're having this protest, which has been continuing for quite a while now. As a businessman, let's hope this gets settled quickly and that everyone stays safe while they practice their right and freedom to assemble and protest. Okay, well, let's get back to business. This week, we have another Kickstarter crowdfunding episode with Martin Kessler, a friend of mine and a German entrepreneur here living in Hong Kong. He has a lot of experience doing a few Kickstarter projects himself, and he also has helped a lot of other people and got lots of experience with this whole crowdfunding phenomena. So let's listen in. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We have Martin Kessler here on the call. Thanks for being here, Martin.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Sure. Thanks for sharing. So we've known each other from different startup events. And I also remember you were in Guangzhou for a while, and now you're living and working in Hong Kong. Maybe you want to introduce yourself and also maybe talk about that process?
All right. So I'm originally from Germany, but I've been now living overseas for the last 9 years. I lived for some time in Korea and then in China. And in China, I actually started my most recent startup, which is called PhoneJoy, which is a consumer electronics gaming company that has been working on a device that basically encloses around your smartphone and then adds physical buttons, turning it effectively into a mobile console like the PlayStation Vita or like the Nintendo DS. I've been doing that for 3 years, but most recently I stopped doing that and I'm now working on different projects, mostly some freelance consulting work. And I'm also now a mentor at the Founder Institute in Hong Kong.
Cool. Thanks, man. So I think today, a lot of people really like the episodes where we talk about crowdfunding and experiences people have, especially from Hong Kong and Asia, because it's a little bit different. So yeah, PhoneJoy, I've followed you along since, you know, you were a few different offices in Hong Kong and your team relocated. Maybe first we could just talk about, I know you moved to I'm kind of curious if you want to share about the Guangzhou to Hong Kong move.
Sure. So 3 years back, I was actually living in Guangzhou. I was doing mostly some, you know, exporting work, you know, consumer electronics, everything like from phone accessories to, you know, knockoff gadgets, exporting that to Europe mostly, small and large orders. And while I was doing that, I came up with the idea was PhoneJoy. And it worked pretty well for us in the beginning because, you know, in China, it's easy to do the prototyping. You have like wide access to all the different components and it was relatively cheap to live there. And it was easy to find, you know, day labor to actually assemble those controllers that we were first doing. And then, though, after we launched, we had like tons of issues. You know, we had to incorporate, we had to handle the logistics, like because we were shipping directly to customers as well. We were selling them directly through our website and eBay and Amazon and all these different channels. And it didn't really work very well for us doing that in Guangzhou. So, which is why we decided actually to incorporate the company in Hong Kong, handle the logistics in Hong Kong. And because of that, we saw ourselves going to Hong Kong so many times that at one point we just realized it might be best for us to actually move all together to Hong Kong.
That's pretty awesome. I think, you know, I'm still kind of traveling a lot back across border. And I keep going back and forth in my mind also. So it's cool to maybe I'll get more ideas from you. It's because I'm a little bit, I guess I'm still on a cheap side of, yeah, of China.
Well, it definitely helped us, you know, like rent and cost of living was a lot more expensive. And for us, that really was a big no-no, right, to start up and spending that much money on rent and food, right? So in China, we could do without that and live cheaply, like on a few hundred bucks a month, right?
Yeah.
But once you have funding and once you start getting more serious and also for business development, Hong Kong turned out to be a much better place for us.
Cool. All right. So let's move on. So PhoneJoy is an awesome product. I mean, I haven't seen it develop, and I think you guys had a pretty good campaign on Kickstarter. So I think I want to focus on that a little bit. Maybe you did briefly talk about the product, and then you did just mention eBay and online. So can you talk about your process with crowdfunding and why, at what point?
Okay, so let me rewind a little bit. So 3 years back, we actually had developed I would call now an MVP, which was basically a modified knockoff PlayStation controller that we just made work with smartphones and tablets.
Okay.
And that we were selling through eBay and all these different online channels. And from that, we actually got a lot of feedback from customers. You know, they had all these ideas that they wanted it to attach to a phone. They wanted to have, you know, better quality buttons and all these different things. And we were like, hey, why don't we just develop a product from scratch? But developing a product from scratch requires tooling and a lot more R&D. So we didn't have the funding for that. We only had enough funding to develop a first rudimentary prototype, I would call it. And that in turn allowed us to go to Kickstarter. Because like at that time, nobody really wanted to invest in us. They didn't want us to give money because we didn't really have, you know, like a track record and all these things. We didn't have a lot of traction. So Kickstarter basically allowed us, you know, to get traction. We got press because at that time when we launched in late 2012, Kickstarter was very hot. A lot of press wanted to cover Kickstarter projects. So that was the ideal channel for us to get actually some outside attention outside of Hong Kong and China. And on top of that, we got, you know, some money without having to produce the product up front, right? So that was some good money that we could work with and actually start operations. And finally, all that was showing potential investors that there was a market there and it was a viable business and that there might be a potential tech company behind that in the end, right?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, people are loving Kickstarter. I wonder, right now we're in, you know, August 2014 when we're recording today. So that's, you know, some people still wonder if Kickstarter, but still seems pretty hot, you know, for hardware companies.
It's still growing. I mean, there's more and more projects, but now it's getting more like the App Store, right? You have a lot of projects and it's hard to get noticed nowadays because there's so many now.
True. So, you know, I think like you said, like the PR advantages, again, maybe everything always changes with time, but, sure, you know, maybe you can give some people some PR ideas for the Kickstarter.
Okay, so I often get to talk to like other hardware startup founders, and obviously everybody is trying to do now a crowdfunding campaign because crowdfunding campaign is a no-brainer if you want to go into the consumer market because it allows you to test it and all that. But what they often get wrong is that the campaign doesn't really start on the moment when you press the launch button on Kickstarter. It actually starts way earlier than that. You actually need to build up your PR contacts as early as possible, I would say, because it takes time to develop these. And there's actually quite a few tools that you can use. I mean, there's like a few channels, you know, like you can use something like Social Pro to actually locate influencers of your niche. And then you can actually start in contact with them and you can actually turn them into, I would almost say, evangelists for your product. Because if you have something that is really useful to them, they will promote it to their own followers on Twitter. And then if you want to get press, don't just send, you know, like TechCrunch a tip or something. You have to do some research, right? So what we did, we were like actually doing some extensive research in terms of like who's been covering similar gadgets, who's been covering gaming, see what they've been writing about it, and then locating their, you know, contact details and then reaching out to them and then slowly building up, you know, the project. You know, it's not like you want to send them an email on the day you launch. You want to actually send them an email at least a month before that, and you want to give them like some more background and a teaser, and you want to build a story around it, right? It's not like another gadget. It's more like there's something more to it. Like you're trying to change something. You're trying to introduce something that is truly changing the way we use our products, right? That's I believe what you want to do. You don't just want to send them an email like, oh, I got this new Kickstarter, because they get 100 of these. You don't want to do that.
Yeah, I like your idea. Try to get them to buy into your idea, yeah, and the vision, not just the product.
So. It's more about the story, right? I mean, like, nobody wants to buy just products anymore. They want to buy an experience almost.
Yeah, I'm using my Pebble right now for my notes. So it's reading my notes, pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, the Pebble was one of our main inspirations in the beginning. You know, like, I was one of the Pebble backers, like, in, when was it, in May 2012?
Yeah, something,
and
yeah.
And that really gave us the idea, you know, like, you know, like there were a couple crowdfunding projects before the Pebble, but the Pebble was really, I think, the catalyst for many other hardware startups. They were seeing the possibilities that you don't have to go the traditional route anymore and go through angel or VC money in the beginning.
Yeah, it's really amazing. So I hope you don't mind talking about this, but you said, you know, you're a German person in China. And you listed on Kickstarter US, I believe, yeah, right? So I get a lot of people asking me too. So what do you, how did you do it? Or how do you recommend maybe non-US or non, you know, I know it's in UK and Australia now too and other markets, but what do you suggest for those people that maybe it's not in their country?
So that was actually a major headache for us at the time, because at that time you could only go through the US, and what you needed for the US was an Amazon business payments account, right? And you can only get that if you have a US bank account. And you can only get a US bank account if you have, you know, how do you call it? The
EIN or social security number.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, you can only do that once you have established a business and all that. And then you have to be there in person to establish a bank account. But fortunately, through another introduction in my network, I discovered a really friendly accountant in California, and he was able to actually set up the company for us, set up the bank account, and do that all like for a couple hundred dollars, basically. And that basically allowed us to go on Kickstarter, and that really got us excited, because in the beginning we were like thinking maybe we have to go on Indiegogo, but as a matter of fact, I think on Kickstarter there's like four times as many projects that have raised above 100,000 US dollars. And it is really just the platform that is so much bigger than Indiegogo right now, which is why I would advise almost anyone to choose Kickstarter for any projects where you hope that you could get more than 50,000 US dollars.
Yeah.
If you're like a really small project, it's probably not worth going through the hassle of having to set up like an Australian or American or British company.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, I think Indiegogo is a lot more work, I think, to really... It seems like you have to really push it yourself more than get... It seems like there's real buyers on Kickstarter, like, just looking for cool stuff.
Besides, what I've been seeing now is that you can perfectly launch a Kickstarter, and then after the Kickstarter, you can still launch an Indiegogo campaign, you know? Because Kickstarter only allows people to use credit cards, right? But when we were actually running our campaign, a lot of people came to us, yeah, I really like your project, I would love to back you, but I don't have a credit card, I don't know how I can back you. And that was the moment when we actually set up a PayPal account so people could give us money through PayPal.
Mm.
But in fact, what we should have done instead was to create an Indiegogo campaign after the Kickstarter campaign that would allow these people to back it. Because it's easier, it's a bit bigger platform than if you just do it yourself through like a self-starter or something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome idea. Would you think to do it at the same time or wait?
Yeah, wow. I mean, like, if I ever do, like, my next crowdfunding campaign, I would definitely do first Kickstarter, and then after that, I would do Indiegogo. And I've been advising friends to do that, and it's been working pretty well for them, you know? As long as you can explain to people that you're not really doing another crowdfunding campaign, but it's more like to give other people a different channel to use so they can actually back the project and make it a success.
Cool. So you say after, meaning after it's closed on Kickstarter or what?
Yeah, after it's closed on Kickstarter, you know, like you will always get email requests where people ask you, like, how can I back you? I missed the Kickstarter campaign. Or alternatively, I couldn't back you on Kickstarter because I don't have a credit card.
Got it. Okay, that's really amazing advice. Another big pain point people talk about is fulfillment, which you say you did that in Hong Kong and you manufactured in China. Maybe you can just share a little bit about your suggestions here.
Yeah, fulfillment is actually a major headache when you think like that different countries, they have different regulations, they have import tax sometimes they don't. And in the end, it took us probably quite some time to really figure out like what is like the best and most efficient solution for us. And in the end, we settled like for a solution that was both in Hong Kong as well as in the US. So we used Hong Kong for everything besides the US, and the US we used for anywhere in America, basically. In Hong Kong, there's basically a number of different carriers that you can use. All you need is basically a good fulfillment partner. And we used Red Hare for that. And they basically allowed us, you know, like to ship like almost anywhere within 1 to 2 weeks. But for the US, I would say Americans are a bit spoiled. So they kind of expect, you know, delivery within a few days, if not on the same day almost. And for that, you can use, you know, Amazon fulfillment. So Amazon fulfillment you can use for almost anything. Like you can use it for selling on Amazon, but you can also use it for your Kickstarter, or you can use it for selling through your own website. And it's really cheap to do it through Amazon. All you need to do is to basically ship it via either air freight or sea freight to the US and then ship it to one of their warehouses. And they have tons of them. They have almost anywhere in every state several warehouses. And then they can fulfill it from there anywhere within the country for just a few dollars, basically. So it actually worked out cheaper doing that than doing it from Hong Kong. And it's also faster in the long run.
Yeah, that's really, I'm a well American. I know Americans are spoiled like with fast shipping, and I think they love that more than anything.
Once you have that set up, you can use it, you know, like for, you know, selling on Amazon directly, which allows you for great margins as well. And if you use their own fulfillment services, then all your customers will be eligible for Amazon Prime, which is a great service, right?
Yeah, I mean,
and also gives you better ranking on Amazon if you use Prime.
Exactly. So yeah, it's really, I mean, really valuable info. So thanks for sharing with everybody.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a lot of European customers, you can do the same kind of thing in Europe as well. But I always advise people to be wary of having too many different logistics and warehouse operations, because then you will end up building a lot of inventory. And you don't want to do that because it takes a lot of flexibility away. You know, like imagine you run out of stock in the US, but you still have like a few hundred units in Europe, but it's really hard to ship those around between continents. So that's really a situation you don't want to be in.
Fulfillment and inventory is a
it's really a major headache.
Yeah, horrible.
It's a big drain on your cash flow.
Yeah. So, you know, you're still in Hong Kong, and I always like to ask people, like, you know, would you advise people to maybe move to Hong Kong or do it from there, or versus like staying in the US or Europe, or maybe they're in China, or what are your thoughts about advantages or disadvantages in Hong Kong?
I mean, generally speaking, like, I wouldn't advise somebody to go to Hong Kong if they want to develop, you know, consumer software for the world, because that doesn't really make much sense. You can do that in other places much better, because there's more talent, it's cheaper to live, and probably it will be easier for you to interview customers as well. But Hong Kong has a few advantages for some businesses. So I think it's really good for hardware companies. I think it's really good for fintech, maybe also for some, you know, like clean tech. For these niches, I would say Hong Kong can really add a lot of benefit, because Hong Kong is a financial center. It's really close to Shenzhen. It's easy to set up a company. It's low tax. It's easy to get visas for foreigners. Logistics are great if you do fulfillment. So there's a number of big advantages of being in Hong Kong. But yeah, it really comes down to what kind of business you're doing. So if you do software and for consumers, then probably Hong Kong might be only a place for you, maybe to do the first prototype, but then you probably want to relocate maybe to the Bay Area to get more funding and all that. Because Hong Kong is still kind of behind when it comes to the fundraising, right? So when you see angel rounds here, you get very few money for relatively high equity. So
That's
really one of the downsides of being in Hong Kong. Not so much a living cost. It's more like getting funding, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. I think Singapore is also, I think, probably the best for funding in Asia.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you do software, then maybe Singapore might be a better place for you. Or if you want to do something for the Chinese market, then don't come to Hong Kong. Go to Beijing or Shanghai or maybe even Shenzhen, right? I mean, like, you have much more talent there and you have the better connections, you know, to the relevant government agencies. And you want to be there for that, right?
Yeah, probably Beijing if you're doing, like, software in China. Cool, man. Well, thank you so much for sharing. I think you gave a lot of advice. Is there any other kind of like general advice you want to share with people, or maybe their first Kickstarter, or, you know, I think a lot of listeners still are, you know, in the US or in their home countries thinking of some idea and they're confused of what to start, or maybe where should they even start to even open a Kickstarter? You know, I like your strategy where you were selling on your kind of like, you know, you said knockoff PlayStation controllers, but that's really great because you learned your market, you learned what people wanted, right? Rather than just starting brand new.
Exactly.
Is that something you would advise people, or if they have some kind of new idea that they want to do?
It is true. Kickstarter allows you to verify some of your ideas, but you want to do some of that before you even do the Kickstarter, right? I mean, even a Kickstarter costs quite a few money, you know, to set up. You need to shoot the video to create some really good product photos, and it takes a lot of time to set up. So before that, even, you want to really figure out, does my product really work for Kickstarter? Is it something that's attractive to crowdfunding platforms? Because sometimes it isn't, because maybe it is very niche, or maybe it's for businesses, or maybe it's something that is already kind of available on the market and people don't want to wait 6 months for your product to come out, or even 12 months if they can buy something very similar in a retail shop right now, right? Okay. So you want to do your research first. You want to know whether your product is a good fit for Kickstarter. And after that, you want to spend some time defining your message, right? I mean, like, a lot of times you see a Kickstarter project or an Indiegogo project and you have a look at it and you don't really know what it's about. I mean, you really want to have a clear message that somebody watches the first 10, 20 seconds of your video and they immediately need to get, where's the benefits? Does it apply to me? And these kind of things, right?
Yeah.
I think that's very important to establish beforehand, because I've seen too many Kickstarter campaigns that have gone terribly wrong because they didn't do enough homework before they launched. And you always hear about the big success stories on crowdfunding platforms, but you don't hear anything about the 1,000 failures that have come for like every big success.
Yeah, I agree. I'm getting more and more people sending me their videos and things, and you can't really understand right away what it does. So people get too fancy. I can see they spend a lot of time and money, but I think simple is the key, right?
Yeah.
Cool. So thanks so much, Martin. Maybe you can share your Twitter, website, email, whatever you like.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can always tweet me at KesslerHK. That's KesslerHK. Or you can always email me at martin@kessler.hk. So it's pretty straightforward.
Great, great. And so then you said you do some consulting and things. Maybe people need help.
Yeah, I mean, if people need any help with their crowdfunding platforms, it doesn't have to be, you know, like, depends like how much advice you need. But I usually give a lot of free advice away because I just love to see people succeed with some good ideas, right? That's why I'm also a mentor at the Founder Institute.
Awesome. So thanks again, Martin, for coming on the show.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for having me, Michael.
All right.
Yeah.
That's a wrap. Thank you, Martin, again for coming on the show and sharing. You rock. Quick update about my book, Hong Kong Business Supercharged. I'm set on launching November 1st. I've gotten past 50,000 words now, and it's really been exhausting, but it does feel really great. I'm on the second draft now, and I have friends looking it over and working on getting an editor to check it out. You know, I've been doing basically 2 hours a day at least, from like 7:30 a.m. to like 9:30. and every day, even weekends. I'll share my experiences about writing this book and how I got it onto Kindle and other platforms once I'm finished. So hope you guys can follow along, and thanks for listening again. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.